The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler back with you here. Final hour of the Tuesday, June 6th George Show. A quick reminder, this weekend, Western Conservative Summit. I almost elevated to the World Conservative Summit. Someday, Jeff Hunt does such a good job with this through the Centennial Institute, who 710 is paired up with, to put on this great thing. You've heard the ads running in the in-between times. A lot of huge speakers, including Boebert, Buck, Metaxas, Gabbard, Gaffney, Hawley, a ton of them. I get to introduce on Saturday night. That's why you stick around. I get to introduce the CEO of the Babylon Bee. I'm looking forward to that. Friday and Saturday. Go to 710kanyus.com. Figure out how you can get yourself there out there at the Denver Convention Center. Now, we had been talking about two different issues, both related to firearms. One was the 1 to 2,000 folks that hit the Capitol yesterday. White women, by the way, at the request of apparently women of color and disabled women who don't count as white women. If you're white and disabled, you don't count as white women because of, I presume, your privilege in being able to walk or something. Having said that, that issue right there, they're calling for the governor to exercise powers he doesn't have and cure cancer and also ban all firearms and mandate that people sell their firearms back to the government. And then the second issue was the one involving, really it ended up being about two cases. One, an older one, that was the old dude in Missouri who shot the African-American kid who went to the wrong door to try to go pick up his brother, shot him twice. And then this disturbance that took place, a fight over where kids were playing, a neighbor dispute, and one neighbor shot another neighbor in front of her 9-year-old son right through a door, a locked door. And we had a great conversation, I think, about really your thoughts on how these different things impact the movements towards preserving Second Amendment liberties. What are the limitations of it, as well as the other side, which is, do the efforts at the Capitol actually make those who are pushing for quote unquote reasonable gun control seem more extremist? Does it damage the brand? I've said we'll take all callers. I'm happy to continue to do that right now with Andrew on 710 KNUS. Andrew, how are you?
Good morning, George. I'm fine. Thank you very much.
What do you think?
So, well, you know, I wanted to draw a parallel between what we're talking about here and DUI. So think of this as a thought exercise.
Okay.
You know, you can have a discussion. There's a question about whether the two shootings that we're talking about were justified. But yep. I'm not sure we've got all the facts to really know.
I agree.
Regardless, I think you'd have to say that a mom who's now dead, that's a tragedy. Absolutely.
No doubt.
And, you know, if you can imagine the same mom innocently driving along the highway and some guy wipes her out, that would also be a tragedy.
Yes.
But what you don't have are a group of progressive white women assembling around the Capitol in Colorado to demand outlawing all automobiles and a mandatory buyback of all the ones that are out there. So, you know, I'm bothered by the degree to which the progressive left seems to have, I don't know, an orthodoxy, if you will, of beliefs that aren't necessarily grounded in data. You know, you've asked earlier, is there something that we ought to do about it? Well, yeah, we ought to make sure that the people who act irresponsibly in the taking of another human life are punished for that. You know, and, you know, here I think, for example, about the Aurora Theater shooter, very little doubt as to his guilt or innocence, you know, and yet he continues to live and breathe. You know, we need to have more certain, faster punishment for the guilty and, you know, and get away from this orthodoxy of getting rid of guns to arrive at a place where, you know, it's trite but true. When guns are outlawed, the only people who are going to have them are the outlaws. This is crazy what the women in front of the Capitol are doing.
Let me ask you, Andrew, because there's a lot of what you said that I agree with. And listen, it was my failure that kept, you know, something that I did wrong during the trial, and I'm going to go to the grave wondering what it was that kept that dude from getting a needle in his arm. But now that we know that it wouldn't have mattered, right? Because even if we'd gotten the death penalty on the Aurora Theater shooter, Polis would have commuted his sentence when he commuted the assassins of Rhonda Fields' son and fiance, as well as Nathan Dunlap, the wanton, cold-blooded murderer of four other people in that Chuck E. Cheese back in 93. So it wouldn't have, mattered. I agree with you on this, but do you think that if we simply had more certainty and swifter punishments, obviously with still providing the due process protections under the Constitution, that in and of itself would change what we're seeing out there with the use of firearms?
Well, I guess first, apologies. I didn't know that you were involved in the Aurora Theater shooter, and I didn't intend to slam you.
No. Buddy, I don't take it that way. I've been very candid about this. I was the district attorney and the lead prosecutor on that case. I've been very candid about what happened and why it happened. So, buddy, don't feel guilty at all. I didn't say that for you. I said that just so the public knows. Hey, that failure, I own that failure.
Okay. Well, to your question, I think yes. We all have freedom of choice, but we don't have freedom of consequence. And if we could culturally, societally, draw a little cleaner, straighter, shorter line between bad decisions and the consequences that they reap, it's that that I think is the long-term solution.
Andrew, do you think that, and I like the analogy with the DUI thing, it's a little different in this way. Those people who drive drunk and end up killing 1, 2, 10 people that Colorado has decided should be probation eligible no matter how many they kill, that is at least not an intentional conduct. Maybe it rises to the level of extreme indifference, but it's not the same kind of conduct as dude who steps out of his doorway and shoots a black kid, or someone who shoots through a door and kills a mom in front. Those are different in that way. But I understand your position to be more about the implement that caused it, and we just don't see people standing up. Frankly, I think your point is well made in this way, too. Why don't we see these same moms showing up and saying, hey, let's at least have mandatory prison for people that kill people when they're drunk? You know what I mean? Or your repeat offenders. We make these people probation eligible no matter how many times they drive over somebody drunk. So I get your point there. But do you see something else in society, Andrew, that is making life cheaper, or the perception of life as being less valuable?
Well, let me comment on your position that, when somebody's DUI, they're not in full control of their brain.
No. Intentional killing.
Yeah, it's not an intentional killing, but they're intoxicated. I think another intoxicant potentially is just way too much adrenaline in the system. It clouds your thinking.
I don't want to go down that road, Andrew, is if we do that, then we take away the personal responsibility thing. And if one thing the left has been really good about murdering, it's personal responsibility. Over the last two decades, we have murdered personal responsibility.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, George. I was sort of focused on the first point.
Make your point, man. I'm not rushing you anything. And this is a conversation. This isn't a criticism thing. We're just going to keep talking and educating each other and the people listening.
Yeah, okay, but I guess I lost focus on the question that you had for me as I was thinking about adrenaline in the moment and the degree to which that. So what's your question for me?
Yeah, so what I'm asking is there something else going on there? I agree that the swiftness and certainty of punishment can have an effect. I do believe that. But is there something else going on here, man? Is there a life thing that we have just gotten to a place where we have depreciated the value of life to the point where now, even in the subconscious, shooting another person just doesn't seem like that big a deal? I mean, when we talked to Robert and Jacqueline, there was this notion that the familiarization of weapons by their parents and stuff came with it the idea that life is so sacred that when you pull the trigger, you better be right, you better be certain, and you better be spot on, all that other stuff. Have we moved away from that? Is life just less valuable today, and that's part of what we're seeing?
Probably. I don't know how to put my finger on why. Is it the decline of the role of religion in the country? Is it the decline of the role of family? Is it the increasing percentage of single-parent families? Is it, the degree to which the mainstream media doesn't tell you the whole story, whenever we read the news? I don't know. But, yeah, I think you're on to something.
What's the answer here? If you're a Second Amendment guy, and you sound like one to me, is there any role that the law should seek to play in getting between the people that pull the trigger for all the wrong reasons and the firearms themselves?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, the Second Amendment exists for a variety of reasons. And, you know, it seems like every time we put some law in place that further gets between firearms and the people's right to own them, it's well intended, but it's usually ineffective, and it's just a form of virtue signaling. So, you know, I would say no, you know, kind of stay where we are, but, you know, by God, if you pull the trigger and you're in the wrong and you fail to appreciate that you were taking another human life, know that your life is going to change forever.
Well, that's true. That is absolutely true. And in fact, there's this company out there, I can't remember what it's called, Law Shield or something, but they exist for gun owners themselves to try to provide them some money for legal protection if they end up using their firearm for the invariable criminal prosecution or lawsuit that stems from it. Andrew, very thoughtful call, man. Thank you for that. That was Andrew. And when I don't know the city, I'm just going to make it up, from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And no, I think he's from somewhere in Colorado. Thanks for that phone call. Andrew's line is open at 303-696-1971. A text, one of the texts that has come in: we need a system that provides for a fair trial followed by a first class hanging. I know that you're tongue-in-cheek on that whole thing right there. I do think certainty of punishment, and I told you about this with even the low-level offenses, maybe even more effective with low-level offenses like theft, rather than do the Lululemon zero tolerance for anyone trying to stop thieves versus zero tolerance for thieves. Wouldn't you rather shop at a store, by the way, that said that? If Lululemon came out and said, we won't tolerate theft, you will be safe here in our store, we will not tolerate crime in our store, period. Wouldn't that make you feel like, no, I don't know if you're a Lululemon guy. Billy has such an incredible collection of the tight pants that he wears into the, it's really remarkable and a little bit unsettling. But wouldn't you shop at a store that said that? So I get Andrew's point right here. But I, you know, and I don't want to turn this whole topic on its head, because I've got this other issue I want to talk about with Tim Scott. But there's part of me that thinks we have just progressed, I'm using air quotes again, progressed society to a place where life just isn't as important anymore. It's just not that valuable. What's that, Billy? Oh, we do. Did I miss that? Golly, geez. Apparently I'm still just the amateur novice radio guy, because I did not see that we have a call. Bill from Parker. Bill, you're on 710 KNUS.
Hi, George.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Yeah, hi.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I called you in the past, and basically my contention was then, and it remains now, that the Second Amendment applied to the state's rights to have a militia, and it had nothing to do with how personally scared you are or your personal safety. The right to carry, individual right to carry guns, is a wholly fabricated right of the Supreme Court. It's not in the Constitution. And when you couple that with,
what do you mean? Say that again. Say that last part again. You were talking
the,
really
the
fast.
Individual, the right to a right to individual carrying of a gun is not in the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment talks about a militia, which is a collective noun. It's a group of people. And it refers to the relationship between that the state and the militia and the federal government. That's what the Second Amendment is. There's no individual right to carry a gun in the Second Amendment. That was constructed by the Supreme Court in the Heller decision and in other decisions along the way.
Yeah, but Bill, that's not a big deal the way you say it. And I say that because so many constitutional rights were interpreted out of the words that have been written, right? I mean, the idea that that somehow being put to hard labor is cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment, that's not true. That wasn't true at the time of the drafting, but the Supreme Court interpreted a current standards or the current standards of the community. That's invented out of law. This isn't really any different than that, right? Like the Fourth Amendment, searches and seizures, what's reasonable, what's not, what requires a warrant, what the good faith exception. All of those things are not words that appear in there. They're interpreted. And right now the Supreme Court has said under Heller, it is an individual right. Don't we have to honor that?
Unfortunately, you probably do. I mean, that's why the Supreme Court is such a powerful institution. But basically, you know, George, you're a lawyer. Lawyers and judges, what they do for a living is they assert things. They assert facts or figures, or they assert the meaning of words or the meaning of events, and they hope to get those assertions abided by either by a jury or a higher judge. And no word has an absolute meaning, really. I mean, maybe black and white or something do, but very few words have absolute meanings. Words' meaning change over time. They change in context. And using that gray area of what words mean, ultimately a court can say one equals seven. I mean, they can little by little say, well, you know, this might mean this, and then they move it this way. Then they say, well, in that case, these words could mean this, and they move the interpretation a little further in that direction. And basically, it comes down to courts can twist anything any way they want. And that's what they did here. It's
Is
very clear in the Second Amendment.
The words, you think so? I mean, if you read that opinion by Scalia, there isn't a lot of twisting. There's a lot of historical reference and going to the original intent of the framers. Is that twisting the words? That's not quite the same thing as inventing a new fact.
I think he worked backwards from a conclusion. He worked backwards from a conclusion. There was a dissent written by I can see the guy's face. He's retired now, the judge that wrote the dissent.
Breyer or Souter? I can't remember who it was.
Yeah, I think it was Breyer. It wasn't Souter. I think it was Breyer.
Breyer's the living Constitution guy. He's the guy that believes that the Constitution means whatever the current generation thinks it means. That is a huge departure from what originalists like Scalia and Thomas think.
I can see. Yeah, for some reason, I'm drawing a blank here. I think it was Breyer, but I'm not sure. But in any case, a militia is a collective noun. And if you read the history, it was about the southern states being able to keep their slaves on the plantation. That's why the Second Amendment is there. It had nothing to do with crime or defending your house. That's
okay,
just the history
of
it.
Tell me where that leaves us. Where are we now with that? You are in disagreement with the current Supreme Court law. Now what?
Right. Okay, so that now they've completely, I would say, trivialized access to guns. And when you couple that with the constant fear-mongering you see on places like Fox News and other outlets on the Internet, constant fear-mongering, you get these situations where these guys, someone's knocking on their door and they fear their life is threatened. You know, and that's why you have, there was an incident about 2 weeks ago where a woman was killed on a highway, and I think it was in Dallas, because two guys who, I don't know if they had a road rage or they knew each other from before, they're shooting at each other out of cars going down the highway and killed her. As far as I know, they haven't been found.
And you'd call that criminal conduct,
And you got more and more incidents like this because guns are just everywhere because they've been trivialized by the Supreme Court with the help of the NRA.
Why do you say the Supreme Court trivialized them?
Because they trivialize access to them, okay? Access to weapons.
So? Listen, if the Supreme Court rules that having an abortion is a right, have they trivialized abortions or access to abortions?
I don't know about that. All I know is there was just a ruling where I think it was a state-level ruling in Texas, I think, where an 18-year-old can buy a gun. Well, that lowers the bar. That's what I'm calling trivializing. You lower the bar, and to the point where you've basically removed any barriers to getting a gun. The guy who did the golden.
That's true, because 17 years old can't get it. There is a barrier.
Right. But I'm saying anything above 17, you've completely removed the barrier. And by the way, by removing the barriers to people above 17, well, guess what? Those guns are in the houses of those people, and now 17-year-olds get them. The guy who did the Connecticut shooting there in the little.
Do you think the laws are more lax today on firearms than they were 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago when the murder rate was different? Do you think that the laws are more lax now? How so?
Absolutely.
How so?
I don't know anything that was, unless you're a convicted felon, I don't know anything that stops you, you know, from legally getting a gun in almost every case if you're an adult and you got the money on your credit card.
Yeah, but here's my point, man. Yeah. Since 2012, remember, were you here in Colorado in 2012?
Yes, I was.
Okay, do you remember we had the Aurora Theater shooting, we had Sandy Hook, and the response from the Democrats who were at the time in charge of both chambers of the legislature was to pass a magazine capacity law and a universal background check law. They passed both those things, and the murder rate went up, and it has continued to go up. And so they passed more laws on safe storage of firearms and I think mandatory reporting of stolen firearms, and the murder rate continues to move in about the same direction that it has with some variation. So if we had less laws in the past and a lower murder rate, what are these things doing for us now? I mean, You see what I'm saying? Like, there's something changing in society, and it's not the laws related to guns, because those are all changing in the other direction.
Yeah. Well, you know, the murder rate, I left the New York area in the late 80s, and at that time, there were 2,100 murders in New York City in that time frame.
Yeah.
And now for years now, they've been well below 1,000 per year. Murder rates are, you know, they're complicated things. The magazine thing, obviously, that's meant for mass shootings. Most murders are one-off, you know, one by one, you know, their girlfriend, boyfriend, or there's some whatever. They're not done with a massive AR weapon type thing. So that AR thing was the magazine thing was strictly towards mass shootings, not these retail murders.
Yeah, except they applied it to handguns and stuff too, man.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just limit it
to
rifles.
Well, I mean, same thing. I don't know if most murders are done with you know, Glocks with a 30-round magazine. But you know, the problem is any law you pass, you can always say, and people do always say, well, that wouldn't have stopped this shooting. That wouldn't have stopped that shooting. And it's true.
Well, yeah.
Okay? Any given law isn't going to stop any number of shootings. But what you do is you just raise the barrier and you say, hey, guns are serious business. We shouldn't be giving them out in cereal boxes, which is almost what we've done. If the NRA
that's
had its way,
true.
That's what
but,
we would
but,
be
Bill,
doing.
They always
I'm
use
exaggerating
those
slightly,
crimes
George.
They can't stop. They always use those crimes they can't stop as the reason for it. Remember, we just had Club Q, we had Boulder, and the legislature pulls its hair out and says, oh, my God, we need to raise the age to purchase guns to 21, which would have had no impact on either of those crimes.
Right. But when you make guns more difficult to access in general, especially these rapid-fire weapons, okay, we're not talking about some guy who's got a bolt-action 30-30 that can go elk hunting with. We're talking about a rapid-fire weapon that there's no basis for in terms of personal protection. If you need a weapon like that, you just need to go to the range and practice your aim.
So
if you need 30
everyone
shots,
should be allowed a Derringer under the Second Amendment, but that's it? Just a Derringer?
Well, I'm saying for sure to have an AR, I can fully understand why the legislature say, you know, there's just no reason to have that.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that's how the Second Amendment works. Justify why you should have this thing that the Supreme Court has said is an individual right.
Somebody was talking before about, you know, training and blah, blah, blah. That's where the well-regulated militia comes in. If you're in a well-regulated militia, you're getting trained on the weapon, and you're under scrutiny as to whether or not you're mentally suitable. You know, people get kicked out of the service all the time for being not suitable to be around the equipment that they use. Okay. So it'd be something like that, which is what the Second Amendment originally said. Well-regulated militia.
Yeah,
so I would say if you want to have any kind of weapon you want,
I really
go to a well-regulated militia.
I really do appreciate your position on this, but to suggest that, hey, we're just going to continue to push on this until they undo Heller, I don't know that that's coming, not in the near term. And
it's not coming. It's not coming anytime soon.
I just don't think it advances for us.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, George.
And one quick second, because I'm way long, but I love the conversation. Go ahead.
Okay, this is a tangent. Maybe you know this because of your background. The guy in Boulder shot 10 people, killed all 10 of them. How did he manage to kill 10 out of 10? Do you have any idea what happened there?
I don't. I really don't know the details of it. Okay. I wish I did, but it is incredibly unique. You're right to ask that question, because normally you have deaths followed by a bunch of injured. But either this guy was a great aim, they were all close range. I don't know the answer to that, but it's fascinating.
In fact, they all died on the scene. It wasn't like they died 3 days later in the hospital. They were dead on the spot.
I don't know if they were all headshots. I really don't know, man. It's an interesting question. I hope we get to the bottom of it, because I want this guy restored to competency and then held accountable for what he did. But you're right. That is an interesting fact. Hey, Bill, I'd love to keep talking with you, but if I could see Billy, I presume he'd be giving me the finger through the window because I've taken you so long. Listen, Billy confirms, yes, that's true. Look, let's cut away for a break. We'll come back. I'll continue this conversation if you've got some texts and calls for me at 303-696-1971, or we'll shift gears. We'll talk a little bit about Tim Scott on The View. It's George Brockler, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS. We're on the back half of this thing right now. We have gotten some texts here that I'll read to you on this topic. Lots coming in here. George, murder rate went up because people are unhappy that the Democrats are making our life miserable, period. That's our listener, Eric Manning. Eric, that's crazy. to think that people are unhappy, so they just start shooting each other. I want to hope it's something more than that. If they can't win at the ballot box, they just turn to the guns. That sounds like somebody else. My guns are probably, this is a different text. My guns are probably not stored safe. I think they mean safely. What is the actual law? I'd love for you to share a Cliff's Notes version, Bex and Lakewood. Bex, I'd have to pull that thing up. I'm going to presume it's under 18-9 or -8, which seems to be a lot of gun stuff. I'll take a look at it, and I'll let you know as soon as I look that up. But it requires for the safe storage of firearms. I'm looking it up as we're talking right now in the state of Colorado. But remember, too, the only way anyone would ever know that you didn't safely store your firearms was because they were used in a crime. And so it's like a pile-on charge, right? Like, and it's just a misdemeanor. It's four Democrats sponsored this thing. Monica Duran, Kyle Mulica, who's now a state senator, Jeff Bridges, and Chris Hansen, who at one point had been a candidate for mayor. It makes it a second-class misdemeanor. This is what it says. The bill requires that firearms be responsibly and securely stored when they're not in use to prevent access by unsupervised juveniles and other unauthorized users. By the way, we don't even do that with cars. We don't even do that with cars. The bill creates the offense of unlawful storage of a firearm if a person stores a firearm in a manner that the person knows or should know that a juvenile can gain access to the firearm without the permission of the juvenile's parent or guardian, or a resident of the premises is ineligible to possess a firearm under state or federal law. Bill requires licensed gun dealers to provide with each firearm, at the time of firearm sale or transfer, a locking device capable of securing the firearm. Transferring a firearm without a locking device is an unclassified misdemeanor punishable by a maximum $500 fine. The bill requires the state court administrator to annually report to the General Assembly about the number of charges related to unsafe firearm storage and the disposition of those charges. My God, this was going back to 2021. I think we should have that report. I'd love to know what it says. I mean, have there been any reports of anybody not safely storing their firearms? My guess is the answer is zero, because what's going to happen? Kid goes home and tells his parents that Timmy's dad has a shotgun by the front door, and then they call the police and the police come and execute a search warrant? I don't think so. That's not how it's going to happen. It's some horrible crime occurs, or there's an accident in the home, and then they go backwards, and on top of whatever else has happened, like the child abuse resulting in death or murder, or then they throw the second class misdemeanor on top of you. Super helpful. I'm sure that has really created quite a movement towards the safer storage of firearms, which I do. Mine are locked up. Mine are in a safe. Kids know it. They've never accessed it without me. That's just how it goes. Here's another. These anti-gun Democrat libs are crazy. And I got to say this. I think Bill is probably left of center on the gun issue. I don't know if he's a total lib or not, but he's really wrapped around the axle on an issue that, and listen, folks, before I say this, I just want you to know, it's not inconsistent with what we did on abortion, right? Like, we've thought that Roe versus Wade was wrong for 50 years. We thought that this was something that was always going to be an issue for the states. So it's not like Bill's inventing some crazy position. I just don't think it's a position that's going to change in the near future. And so the conversation about, hey, this SCOTUS misinterpreted the Supreme Court. Yeah, that's interesting. You can disagree with Scalia, but that doesn't move the ball forward for us. That doesn't change the dynamic of where we're at. But I appreciate Bill because he has the guts to pick up the phone and call and state his position, even when he knows I'm not going to disagree with it. That's the kind of conversation that this show encourages, that I like. This is what makes this show go, man. So if you've got thoughts, you want to share them, doesn't matter if we agree or disagree, I'll treat you respectfully. 303-696-1971. Another text, guns are everywhere, but most of America's violence exists in specific communities across the country. And yet still South America and Central America have a higher murder rate than the USA, and guns are illegal there. Bill is illogical, fears facts outside his emotion. I don't agree with his logic, but I don't think you can say he's illogical. I understand where he's coming from. I just disagree with him. The idea that guns are illegal in South America and Central America, I don't know the answer to that. There's a bunch of countries in there, and I just don't know if they're illegal there or not. If that's true, that's interesting. That's noteworthy. I don't think it ends the conversation for us. I'm really starting to think that what ails us is not just the guns piece and who's getting them, because we want to keep them out of the bad hands, the nut jobs and the criminals out there. But there's something else going on, folks. We have cheapened life, and maybe it's something that, was it Rick or Andrew had said before, Andrew, about the lack of faith. I mean, if life exists just because a happenstance of biology and just some atoms slammed into each other accidentally and created our planet, and then life just happened to spring up, and all of this was just sort of science's big mistake or something. If that's all life is, then I get it, man. Then losing it ain't that big a deal. Then it's easy to allow someone to want to kill themselves because life is just too painful to live. Then it's easy to want to abort a baby with a week left in gestation because, you know what, life isn't that big a deal. We've allowed life to become something that is only valuable if someone else thinks it's valuable. I get it then. And it's a lot easier to pull the trigger because you convince yourself that it's not worth it given whatever the situation is. Maybe that's part of it. I do think, though, that there's something wrong with the number of wing nuts out there who get their hands on guns who have no idea what the hell they're doing. And I can't, other than the Second Amendment, what other product do we let people do? We don't do it with alcohol. We don't do it with tobacco. We don't do it with the wacky tobacco. But with guns, we pretty much say, do you have any idea what you're doing? And the person says, I really don't, but I want one. And we go, okay, cash or check, or, well, no one takes checks, cash or card. You can just tap it right there. It's just interesting, right? Part of the second, quote, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's true. That's on there as well. And that has been the longstanding debate until Heller, maybe even after Heller. And that was, what role does that first clause play? The well-regulated militia clause. What role does that play? Does it limit the second part? That's the argument from, you know, the people that see the Constitution as this living, breathing document. Scalia just disagreed along with the majority of the people there. Here's another one. Great, George, great show and thought-provoking. Ask the current caller. Dang it, I missed it. Ask the current caller why the other rights are individual rights, but the Second Amendment isn't. Another fantastic point to be made. The First Amendment is about your ability to express yourself both religiously and with language. The Third Amendment is about your ability to keep the government outside your house, the army outside your house. The Fourth Amendment is about your rights to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures and due process. That's true. Fifth Amendment is about your right to a speedy trial and due process and right to be free of custodial interrogation. Sixth Amendment is actually the right to counsel and speedy trial. Sorry, that's individual. Seventh Amendment is your right to a civil trial in matters in excess of. This was a dumb move, by the way, by the founders back then. I think they put the limit in controversy of like $40 or something like that, which is silly. The Eighth Amendment is your right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment and excessive bail. Ninth Amendment are the rights of the people. That may not be individual, by the way. That may be group. Let me think about that. And then the 10th Amendment is states' rights. So the last two, Texter Steve, it looks like the last two are probably far more collective. But the 1 through 8, I agree with you. But 9 and 10 don't feel like individual rights to me. They feel like group rights, or at least in the matter of the 10th Amendment, states' rights. Your point is, well, it's weird that in the top two, and by the way, it wasn't just accidental that they them 1 through 10, and it just happened that way. They prioritized them for a specific reason, and they thought the first one was the most important and the second most. That's how they did the entire Constitution. Article 1, which is Congress, they intended that to be the most powerful branch of government, and of course it's not. It's turned out to be the executive, but that was their goal. Anyway, interesting text, Steve. Thanks. Here's another one. Well, fellas, oh, it's Jacqueline again, and I am my own militia. Good. I believe you. Another text. Every house in America has deadly weapons accessible to anyone, including children. They are called kitchen knives, yet nobody's afraid, and they aren't used much to kill for now. Gun violence isn't about guns. It's about something else. Billy, take it now or take a break and come back and get Jack. Let's take Jack from Wyoming. Jack, you're on 710. What do you think?
Yeah, George, I hunt in Argentina and Uruguay both, and we hunt the wild boars, and we hunt mainly birds, you know, the pardeses, yeah, which is Spanish for partridge, and we go down there. One time we went for 2 full months. But what I can tell you about their gun laws, no, you can have guns in both of those countries, and we brought 4 guns with us when we went down there. Hunting the wild boars with the locals. The locals use the Dogo Argentino, which is a dog.
Uh-oh. And this Jack, is their favorite. We're losing you. We lost you for a minute there, man. Are you driving through Central America right now? Are you hunting? Jack, we lost you through all the good stuff. All we caught. I'm sorry, man. We lost you. Try it one more time.
I say that the only restriction they have that I know of is on rifles. And that restriction is you can have a rifle, but it can't be chambered in a military round. It has to be in a sporting round. Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
And they have handguns because when they hunt the wild boars, they cut their throats. When the dogs hold the wild boar down, they cut their throat with a knife called a falcone. But they have a backup guy with a .44 mag in case the wild boar gets loose from the dogs and comes after the hunter with a knife, and then they shoot him with a handgun. So, I mean, they have both handguns, rifles, and shotguns in Argentina and Uruguay. So you're getting it from somebody who does that.
Man, that's interesting. Hey, thank you for that call, Jack. I appreciate it. I love being educated by the folks that have been living the stuff that we talk about, including the different facts that are thrown around out there. It just makes us better. Listen, I'm going to cut away for a final break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. I'm going to save Tim Scott for tomorrow. You know, Chris Christie may be announcing, too. I'll tell you about kind of a punch in the face from one of these articles that was written about his entry into the race. When we come back, George Brockler, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS, going to go right to the phone lines. Mike from Denver, you're on 710. What do you think, sir?
Yeah, George, previously you had chatted with a fella about the idea of militia and all that. And quite frankly, we are the militia, okay? Back in the old days, every individual formed that militia. But my real concern was, and you've talked with me before, as I was the guy that was stabbed in the back with a knife in a library.
Oh, yeah.
Bottom line is, there's no justice coming out of this, so don't get too crazy about the justice side of things. But with respect to that, there are 2 lines forming in society. One of them is people willing to go to work for a living. They have a degree of self-esteem that's been generated. They have a degree of self-responsibility and saying that they need to get out, get a job, and earn some pay and make a living. You got another line that's forming, and I don't really want to say this in Denver. I don't want to say it in any populous city. The bottom line is you got another line that's forming with people that have been told all their life they have no self-esteem. They have nothing inside of them that make them believe they're going to get by tomorrow without a government handout. And those people are in line to turn around and use you, your back, as a tool to turn around and get 3 hots in a cot. I'm convinced, and it's only in my mind only, that this guy stabbed me solely to turn around and wind up in prison to where he could get off the streets.
He wanted to go to prison?
He could get off the streets in Denver because he was scared as hell in December, and he needed to go to prison to get himself back into the comfort zone. And I believe that for young people out there.
How much a crime, Mike, do you think is attributable to this? How much violent crime is just someone wanting to go back to prison?
I think there's a quite a bit of violent crime. Most of these people are repeat offenders. They say between 9 and 11 times an individual will turn around and get bumped into the police. I'm sorry?
Did your assailant just then walk into court and plead guilty and say, that's it, I'm out?
No, because at 22, he's absolutely scared that he's going to face as much as 40 years of prison. But these guys don't know that.
But I thought he wanted prison.
These guys don't know that. And bottom line is, yeah, he's been bounced in and out of the prison system so many times that it was getting to be a hassle for him to have to deal with people putting him out on the street. In 2020 through 2022 with the COVID crime spree, people were bounced out on the street, and these people needed to get themselves back in. And I'm convinced,
Forgive me. I think you made your point. I wish I had more time, but I want to get Jim on here, too. He's been holding just as long as you have. Mike, thanks for the phone call. Interesting point. I don't see the empirical evidence for it, but I didn't live it. Jim from, I guess, Bangladesh, because we don't have a city. Jim, you're on 710. What do you think?
Hey, George, I was shocked. my mind was blown to see the statistics on the gun violence over the four-day Memorial Day weekend. There were 700 people shot in those 4 days in the United States. There were 175 killed. There were 17 mass shootings.
What do you chalk that up to?
How come everyone doesn't know? How come it wasn't screaming headlines? 17 mass shootings. I couldn't name one of them because they
It's an interesting point, but what's the answer then? Tell me how we get to a better place.
I think, George, I'm a liberal Democrat, and I think that regulations, I think the Supreme Court said, yeah, reasonable regulations for guns are a part of the Constitution. And I don't understand why Republicans don't support universal background checks. You know, when 90% of the populace does.
Yep. Well, I don't know about 90%, but it's a huge percentage. You're right about that. And that's you've probably gotten us to a place, man, where we could do a huge conversation just on those things. But the short answer would be it's never about just that. And in fact, there's some flaws with that system, that there are people that get denied firearms based on mistakes made in that system. And I think they would also say these would be the Second Amendment folks that that they don't want to create a list. And they believe that the government would then use the background checks to maintain a list of who bought guns and who didn't. And I wish I had more time with you, Jim, because it's a good conversation to have with us on air. Unfortunately, we have talked our way through the whole show. I can't believe it. How much time you say, Billy? 20 seconds. Can't be 20 seconds. Now it's got to be more like 15. Maybe it'll be 12 here in a second. Listen, stick around. 3 o'clock, Deb Flora. 4 o'clock, Stephen Tubbs. We'll be back tomorrow. Chris Christie, Tim Scott, you, me, George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.